my first chan experience, when I was 26. After that experience, my teacher was away in Taiwan. I wrote him a letter. He saw it. He says, "Very good. Wait till I come back. Don't interpret it one way or another." I mean, no need to interpret anything. Mine was clear. After that experience, I was in Samadhi for 1 month. In motion, in activity. Hitting with fish, interacting with others, people fighting, everything inseparable. Pissing, shower, taking a shit. You know, 1 month. When he comes back, my teacher. In that 1 month, my interaction with others is very different. People arguing on the third floor, library. Actually, Kathy, our mutual friend. She was the accountant. She's one of those, if my student is Mr. Action, she is Miss Accomplishment. She handled all the accounting, all the bookkeeping. She's got energy like no one else. She's arguing with someone on the third floor. When you're in that state, step onto the third floor. People see you. They just calm down by themselves. You don't need to say anything. The power from your samadhi is just calm. I have a friend. Right, a friend for over 20 years. He's Czech, Czechoslovakia. He's a monk for a long time. Dhamma Dipa. His first teacher in Thailand. You know, in the forest monk tradition, they have a lot of wild animals, a lot, monkeys. Now you may think monkeys are cute. But if monkeys are this big, 20, 30 of them fighting in the forest, right in front of your hut, they're not so cute anymore. They can rip your head off if they want to. Very strong. So Dhammadipa was a novice. He was kind of very scared, meditating. He came into the hut to his teacher. There's some monkey business outside. Fighting with one another. The teacher goes outside, sits down, meditate on loving kindness. All the monkeys settle down. Right in front of them. The power of samadhi. If you direct that mind to something, then you can change it. You direct that mind to flowers, roses, they will blossom. Of course, you have to add nutrition and take care of them. But, okay. So the mind of vexations, right? In the form of control, in the form of grasping, rejecting, you know, gaining, losing. In terms of practice, we have to learn to let go. Seeing vexations, your own vexations, seeing your own wandering thoughts, a lot of them, you're at peace. Anxin. Yeah, at peace. Learn. You learn to do that. Then, this kind of attitude, then the wandering thoughts will be at peace. We try to change it. Try to use some strategy to kind of correct it. Get away from it. It becomes worse. We continue with the text. Any questions? Please.
Yesterday you talked about compassion and wisdom being the same, two sides of the same coin. Then you talked about essence and function. And could you go on with that? Explain and maybe give other examples of things of essence, the combined essence and function.
Okay. Today I was giving an interview, and a gentleman came in, had a question about the benefits of practice. You know, I talk about stages of practice, which were foreign to this practitioner. Did they lead me to happier states, or should I strive for them, or I'm happy where I am now? What's the relationship? Yeah. And I said that in the course of practicing, cultivating the mind, many sceneries will arise on this path, on this journey. The different states of meditation, they are merely sceneries. They're merely sceneries. We don't have to strive for them, but they may be signposts in the future. If you encounter them, you'll know what to do. As for their usefulness, I gave the analogy of the sun. The sun and its radiance is scattered throughout all directions. That's the natural function of sun, is to shine. The method, it's like a magnifying glass, or it's like solar panel. The sun without method is just kind of scattered. At most, you can just get a tan, or maybe you get burned up. But if you use a method, magnifying glass or solar panel, then the energy can really funnel, right? Focus, and you can accomplish a lot. That's like the stages of practice and the progression of different states. In that process, does the sun change?
No.
No. Does the sunshine change?
No.
No, not really. Is it useful to use the solar panel, to use the magnifying glass? Yes, useful. But does it affect the nature of the sun to shine?
No.
Practice is like this. The natural ability of the mind is just to have all kinds of thoughts. Is to be aware. Is to think. Now you use a method, these thinking subside. And you have all kinds of psychophysiological states, like altered states of consciousness. Because the thoughts subside, become unified. But does that have anything to do with the nature of the mind? No. Practice doesn't have anything to do with the nature of mind. Now you may think, why are we here then? Because without going through the practice, you will not appreciate the nature of mind. And in the course of practice, we recognize something very important. The nature of mind giving rise to the wonderful thoughts, wonderful ups and downs. And in the course, you understand how we get caught up in these thoughts, how they cause us to feel anguish, how we are completely controlled by it. You think of happy thoughts, become happy. You think of sad ones, become sad. Because we're usually caught up with thoughts, with furniture, with forms and appearances. So, the purpose of practice is to understand forms and appearances. Until you understand their true nature. If we don't go through this process, I just tell you the true nature of mind. It has no effect whatsoever. Because you're completely caught up with the words and language, subtle thoughts, forms and appearances. So you use these form and appearances to process my words, and you take that to be real. You take that, oh, I understand now. But this is, you're tricked. So you must directly have a direct understanding, engagement with the thoughts, learning to subside them, learning to go through them, not be influenced by them, by the principle of not grasping, not rejecting. That's how you weed through these forms and appearances. And then, one day, you will understand the nature of these thoughts. The words that you previously have read, have understood, they are impermanent, they are fleeting, they have no intrinsic self-nature, will come alive in you. You understand them. That's the course of practice. So, the essence of mind and the function, inseparable. But just by hearing what the essence is, you have no way to understand them. No way to understand how they're inseparable. It's like you're wearing colored lenses and it's red. And I'm trying to explain to you what is it like without wearing glasses, without wearing colored lenses. And you're trying to look at me, understand? You can't. Right? So the only way to get to the essence is to through form, through function. Through function, we understand essence. Through wandering thoughts, through drowsiness, through the ups and downs, we understand the nature. And once you understand them, we understand that they're inseparable. And after a person is deeply enlightened, that's adjective deeply, not shallow, or once, or twice, deeply enlightened, then, do they have thoughts? Yes. Do they think? Yes. But they think a lot clearer. A lot clearer. And their thoughts are not centered around this constructed, fabricated, as if it's non-changing kind of thing called self. Their thoughts are just natural display of the mind, natural response. And at that time, we don't call it thoughts anymore in Chan Zen. We call it wisdom. Because in the midst of the thoughts, no self-referentiality, no self-attachment. Natural function of the mind, nature, essence, function, same. Is there a watcher? Is there an observer? The observer is gone. That observer is also a furniture. Right? Some people think just witnessing. They practice witnessing. Just observe the passing emotions, passing of thoughts. That's just an expedient means. The natural function of the mind, the natural function of mind to be aware, needs no extra thing called witnesser or observer. That's something extra. You don't need it. Just natural display, natural response in the moment. No need for watcher. Watcher is like a mirror able to reflect, right? You carve a permanent image in that mirror. Etch an image. It can only obstruct. You don't need a permanent image. Just respond. Now, can you separate out the function of the mirror and the essence of the mirror? Very hard to. It's the same thing. What about wisdom and compassion? Wisdom is the nature of emptiness. It's that true nature. And I said the paper is made up of non-paper. Guogu is made up of non-Guogu. Nancy is made up of non-Nancy. It's made up of everyone else, everything else. Past, present, and continues. So when a person becomes enlightened, naturally, compassion is there, which just means no self-referentiality. Understanding the dynamic interconnectedness of all things. So it's like left hand. Why would left hand wage war against the right hand? It's very silly. Left hand don't fight with the right hand. It's connected. So, in compassion, a person that can be in compassion can be yelling, scolding. Like my teacher, scold me. You know, treated me a certain way. And it's compassion. It's inside. Doesn't have hatred. Doesn't have anger. It's just what it needs, because this idiot is doing something very stupid. It needs to be slapped. It needs to be dealt with. But inside, not affected. I remember one time I did something wrong, and I kept that in my mind. And every time I see my teacher, my shifu, because I'd done that wrong thing to him. You know, when I was a young novice, I was absent-minded. I want to practice, so what's important is what I want to do. And I forget what his needs are. Even though I'm supposed to take care of him, I'm his attendant. Right? He'd go to a public lecture, over 1,000 people. I forgot his notes. Luckily, he's an eloquent speaker. Just spontaneously just gave a talk on Vimalakirti Sutra. That was a topic. Right? Idiot, right? You talk about idiocy. There's none greater than the one you're looking at, idiot. Right? So idiot needs to be slapped, needs to be reminded, does it. So when after some time, I just have this guilt. Always done. So every time I see him, he's the person that's the object of my idiocy, right? So I see him, and he reminds me, oh, it's just... So one time in interview room, I said to my teacher, you know, after a period of repentance, prostrations, he used to lead us into, in retreats, slow prostration, repent for past mistakes and so on. Everyone's in tears. Every time he leads, everyone's in tears. The whole Chan Hall. You know. I requested for an interview. I'm there. I say, Shifu, I'm sorry for all the things that I've done. And I feel very bad. And I remember one time, you know, long time ago, I think it was a couple of years ago back then, I still had it in my mind. You know what he said? He said, Shifu, referring to himself, he said, Shifu don't see that. Shifu sees you now, in this moment. Almost got enlightened. Almost. But kind of shed kind of that burden that he just one word, just one sentence, just shed that burden that I carry. He says, I just see you now, here. And it was such a relief. That is a Shifu. That is a teacher. A good teacher. It's like that. Right? Imagine your teacher had many students. He calculate everyone's mistake. This person used to do that. That person used to do that. You can't. You gotta be a mirror. Right? So, that's what I learned. That's wisdom. That's the function of wisdom. Is that compassion? Yes. The essence is wisdom. Function. Compassion. Essence, function. Inseparable. If you have to pretend, I gotta be compassionate. Okay. Yes. I already forgot about that. Don't worry about it. A fake smile. Then. Not helpful. But because he's completely genuine, he says, Shifu doesn't hold that. I see you now, in this moment. Seeing that, he says, yeah. Now you understand? Essence function. This text is actually very easy, simple. Just last night, the opening introduction, you know, I spent some time explaining it, even tonight's talk. The rest of the talk, I'll read it to you. Yesterday, we talked about the Bodhisattva who studies prajna, should give rise to compassion, make great vows, practice for, save all beings, instead of practice for your own selfish needs. Right? Make no division between activity and stillness. Right? Remember? Here's the formal instruction. In order to practice, regulate food and drink so that you take neither too much or too little. Adjust sleep so that you neither deprive yourself nor indulge yourself. When you sit in meditation, spread a thick mat in a quiet place, loosen your robe, your belt, and assume a proper demeanor. Then sit in full lotus posture. This may be a little difficult. First, place your right foot on your left thigh. Then place your left foot on your right thigh. Or you may sit in a half lotus leg, cross leg posture. Simply rest your left foot on your right thigh. And here's my footnote. Or you can sit in any posture you want, as long as your back is straight. Next, place your right hand on your left foot, your left hand on your right palm. Press the tips of your thumbs together. Slowly, raise your torso. Right? Raise your torso. This means the small of your back gotta maintain that naturally curve. Right? Like when you stand up straight, the small your back has a natural curve, right? That's what you want. And if I may add a footnote, the easiest way, use a cushion so that your buttocks is higher than your knees, then your torso, naturally. Slowly raise your torso and stretch it forward a little bit. Swing to the left and right. Then straighten your body and sit erect. Right? To find that center place. Right? Do not lean to the left or right, forward or back. Keep your hip, back, neck, head in line. Making your posture like a stupa. A stupa is kind of like a, you can substitute it with pyramid, which we all understand what it is. Stupa is a Sanskrit word for like a pagoda. The text continues, but do not strain your body upward too far, lest it makes your breathing hasty and unsettled. Why? If your posture is too straight, your abdomen will tense up. Your shoulders will be a little bit tense. Hence, your breath will be upward here. Therefore, your breath will be hasty, unsettled. Your energy will be thrust upward. So you want it just right. You want it to settle down. But upper body naturally straight. Your ears should be in line with your shoulders. Your nose in line with your navel. This is commonsensical enough. But some people, their ears are not in line with their shoulders. Our shoulders are here. Some people's ears are out there when they sit. Like this. This is incorrect. Back here. Nose in line with the navel. Press your tongue against the front of the palate. Close your lips and teeth. The eyes should remain slightly open in order to prevent drowsiness. Very important. Because the text says, if you attain samadhi, unification, oneness, with eyes open, it will be the most powerful. In ancient times, there were monks eminent in practice of meditation who always sat with their eyes open. More recently, Chan Master Fa Yun Yuan Tong, contemporary Chan Master to him, criticized those who sat in meditation with their eyes closed. Their practice is likened to a ghost cave on the side of the Black Mountain. I spoke about this last night. Right? Surely, this has a deep meaning. Known to those who have mastered meditation practice. So if you're used to sitting with eyes closed, it's very easy for you to indulge in quietude, stillness, nothingness. Especially if you practice again and again and again. You want to keep slightly open. Allow light to come in, avoid drowsiness, and be awake. Because these subtle states of what we called dark side of the Black Mountain, inside Ghost Cave, there are slight drowsiness embedded in these states. The mind is hazy, the mind is not clear, the mind no longer has a method. It's just kind of resting there. no method. That's like driving from point A to point B. You stop in the middle, start to watch the neighborhood or the scenery. You don't get anywhere. That's why my teacher used to say, it's like soaking a rock in cold water. After 100 years even, you take it out, it's still a rock. No wisdom. Once you have settled your posture and regulated your breath, harmonize your breath, you should relax your abdomen. Do not think of good or evil whatsoever. And if I may, substitute it with grasping or rejecting, gaining and losing. Whenever a thought occurs, be aware of it. As soon as you're aware of it, it will vanish. Thoughts liberate themselves, by the way, in case you don't know. No need for you to come up with a strategy to be free from them. Instant by instant, they free themselves. Text continues. If you remain for a long period, without objects. Here's the punchline. You will naturally become unified. This is the essential art of seated meditation. This word, this sentence, if you remain for a long period without objects, this is the key. Object here is actually a character for a condition. All things arise out of conditions. All things perish because of various conditions, causes and conditions. All of us are under the influence also of conditions, external conditions. External conditions are favorable, we become happy. Unfavorable, we become sad. Here it says, without conditions, then naturally you enter samadhi, unified. Do you think a method of practice, a method, is a condition? Is a method a condition? Yes. So what is this text saying?
No method.
If you use the method continuously, without thinking good, evil, gaining, losing, as soon as a thought aware, you become a thought arise, you become aware of it. As soon as you're aware of it, it vanishes. This is all connected, right? If you continue to do that and you reach a point where even the method is dropped off, let go, vanishes, then you enter unified state. This is the key. This is very different than a ghost cave inside the dark side of the mountain. In the beginner's meditation workshop that I give every month, I go through these stages of practice. There is a juncture in practice, a fork in the road, in which the mind is settled. Not too much wandering thoughts. Maybe subtle thoughts exist. It is at this juncture, two possibilities can happen. One, the mind becomes hazy, which translates to be lazy. And then feeling the method is extra and you let go of the method. Then that mind just kind of rests in a kind of dark state. if you sit for a long time, it enters into this nothingness. No wisdom can ever occur there. The other fork in the road, that person enters into samadhi. How? By continuing to use the method. Continue to use the method. The method, the method, the method, the method. Samadhi states are like a plane taking off. It takes a lot of effort. But once it's airborne, smooth sailing. Just when you think you have no wandering thoughts, you must sharpen the mind, clarify. As soon as a thought occurs, your power of awareness dissolves them. There's no trailing off with them, following them. It's like a little dust mote appearing in the bright sun. It just vanishes. Appearing, vanishes. That's the strength of the mind. Then it continues, continue, continue, continue naturally until completely unified. Like the person riding a horse. The horse no longer feel burdened by this person on top of him or her. The person no longer feel awkward riding this horse, galloping. They completely become one. Completely become one. Is there a horse? Yes. Is there a rider? Yes. They continue as one. That's unified state. The momentum of concentration continues. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop and look at the scenery. You know, there's nothing in this state. It continues. That's why the object, even the method, let go of. Understand the difference? Mm-hmm. I must say, illusions also can occur in this juncture. Hallucinations, when the mind is settled, not too much wandering thoughts, a little bit unclear. Then that's the time, that's the situation where things deep buried in our consciousness will come up. You may see light, you may see all kinds of stuff. Too much to go into. I continue. This is the essential art of seated meditation. Without doubt, seated meditation is the Dharma gate of ease and joy. If there are many people who become ill by practicing seated meditation, it is because they do not know how to apply their heart, their minds. How to apply it? The previous instruction given. If you understand the significance of this practice, then the four elements of your body, solidity, fluidity, motion, and heat, the four elements. Fire, water, earth, water, earth, wind. This is a Buddhist, ancient way of talking about body. The four elements of your body will become light and ease. Your spirit will be fresh and sharp. Thoughts will be correct and clear. The flavor of the Dharma will sustain your spirit. And your heart minds will be still, pure, and joyful. Have you seen seasoned practitioners, you know, Dharma centers or, you know, of any kind of spiritual tradition? Right? If you see them walking around, you know, this past 20 years, 30 years, then maybe something's wrong in their practice. If they become more rigid, the practice makes us even more natural. Even more at ease, even more normal. So that should be the result. Person's very happy, very joyful. There's a book by Bill Porter. It's called So Close to Heaven. It's in Barnes and Noble's, Borders. He visited a mountain range in which there are a lot of hermits, very famous in China, Zhongnanshan. Bill Porter is Red Pine, by the way. Yeah. Nowadays, he's using his normal name. I don't know why. So he wrote this book, Visit. You see, the interview a lot. His Chinese is perfect, fluent. He's able to talk to the hermits, Taoists and Buddhists, in the mountain range. It's very famous. It's almost like if you want to see hermits, that's the place to go. It's widely known throughout dynasties. It's just been this place. So he went there. You see, in his book, very fascinating, the friendliest people that he meets are all Buddhists. Those people that are kind of cocky, that a little bit strange, that see visitors, close the door. They don't want to be bothered. Are the Taoists. I'm not making discrimination. I'm describing the content of his book. It's very fascinating, right? How the view guides one's practice. How understanding guides one's practice. If you're guided by compassion, like the first paragraph in this text, you see people, welcome. Right? Friendly. The person becomes even more friendly. The face is smiling. Right? If you're guided by the view such that the world is full of dusts, best not to entangle with them. The practice of solitude. The worldly affairs, leave it alone. If you're guided by that view, then probably you behave like that. You see people hustle and bustle, you want to close the door. Chan practice, Zen practice. You should be able to practice not only in the Chan Hall, Zendo, not only in the gardens, a little bit of activity. Winds blow, right in the middle of 42nd Street. Right in the middle of the city. Interaction with others. Practice. When we have a family. Families are complicated. How to love a person. How to raise a human being. Two human beings. Right? How to interact with this person. That's practice. Those who have already clarified the truth are like dragons in water, tigers in the mountains. Crouching Tiger. What is it? What is that movie called?
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Right? This is a Chinese way of describing people of great abilities. Right? In China, the king of the beasts is not a lion. We don't have lions in China. Nowadays we do, but in ancient times, there are no lions. They're introduced by South Asia. So we have tigers and we have dragons. Right? People paint them, talk about them, write about them. We're in modern time. We never saw them. But maybe they did exist in one time. But dragons in China exist in water. Right? They're not the dragon of the 12 knights. You got to kill that dragon. Dragon is a beast, it's a demon. Chinese dragons are nice. They're the rain gods. They're associated with water. So, and we have tigers. Tiger is the king of the forest. So those who have clarified the truth is like dragons in water, tigers in the mountain. This means they are in their domain. And their domain is not some out-of-way place, isolated from everyone else. They're right in the middle of the complexity among other animals. Chan, Zen, in the world. Those who have clarified their eye of wisdom, interacting with others, are like dragons in water. This is their arena. You can't get them down. This is where they exercise their power. What power? The power of compassion. To help all beings. This is their arena. This is where they attain Buddhahood. This is where their Zendo is. This is practice after enlightenment. Right. Same thing with tigers. Those who have not yet realized the truth, then just let the wind fan the flame. There's no need for much effort or contrived effort. Just ascend to it and you'll not be deceived. All along we've been talking about correct views of practice. Nothing go good, nothing go evil, don't grasp this, don't grasp that. That's the way. That's the path. Meditation is the path of ease and bliss. Right? That's ease and bliss. What causes us dis-ease, anguish, is precisely the culprit of grasping and rejecting, gaining and losing. I don't want this, I don't want that. So the path of ease and bliss is just be free from that. How do you keep the flame alive? Let the wind naturally keep the wind, the flame alive. Without much contrived effort. Effort here can be understood as the effort to control, the effort to modify, to change, to get rid of, to seek. None of those effort. Then you'll be at peace. External, this is only talking about the state of mind, being at peace. It's not like you don't have a job anymore, you don't take care of family anymore. You don't do that. You still engage with the world. That's your arena. And the good news is, all of you, each and every one of you, is a dragon, is a tiger. You may not recognize that, my goodness, my arena is actually the world outside. No. I like my arena to be here, Lido Zendo. This little space, nice and pleasant, with AC and everything. This is a nice. No, your arena, your true arena is out there. It's taking care of a loved one. Raising the kids, right? Taking care of your business. Yet, at peace. 安心する. Nevertheless, here's a warning shot. Nevertheless, as the path gets higher, demons flourish. And agreeable, disagreeable experiences become manifold. What's the demons? The agreeable and disagreeable experiences. If you get caught up in that, you'll be in trouble. Yet if you are able to bring forth the correct thought, none of them will obstruct you. The Surangama Sutra, the Tiantai Chi Guan, calming and cessation.
贵风宗密斯, 修正仪, these are text names, give detailed explanation of these demonic states. This, the Chinese expression of demonic state is a little different than the Western idea of demonic state. It's not like ghosts flying around, like exorcism, you know, that movie. The word is 邪. 邪 means off the right track. Deviancy. Incorrect. So, those who would be prepared in advance for unforeseen events should be familiar with them. This just means be prepared. If you're prepared, then you'll be fine. Don't be obstructed by agreeable or disagreeable experiences. That's the instruction. Now, when you move out of samadhi, when you come out of samadhi, out of meditation, move slowly and calmly. Do not be hasty or rough. After you have left samadhi, employ expedient ways to protect and maintain the power of your samadhi at all times. And if I may add a footnote, at least 5 times. Pick 5 times throughout the day. Exercise your practice. Maintain the power of your samadhi at all times, just like you're protecting an infant. An infant. You take care. Then your samadhi power will easily develop. You know, when we had Zia, my daughter, the parents naturally developed this awareness. Just naturally. You know, that you're able to take care. You know, infants sleep with us, at least in the Chinese, Japanese tradition. You know, babies, they sleep with the parents for a long time. You know. Even when you're asleep, you know not to roll over because the baby's right there. Right? Or even taking care of the infant, the toddler. Your eyes and hands are like Avalokiteshvara, one in Bodhisattva. Everything out there. What's potentially can happen, what will happen, what might happen, you're out there. Control, right? Taking care of the baby. That's how you take care of samadhi. The little practice that we have developed, you take care of it. I use this analogy, all the mothers are like, uh-huh, mm-hmm, right? All the fathers are like, yes. The single gate of samadhi is our most urgent business. If you do not practice meditation and somehow experience a quiet state, you will be at a loss. If it comes on just spontaneously. So you practice it, familiarize it, different states arise, different stages. We won't be our lost. Therefore, in order to seek the pearl, the wave must be stilled. If the water is disturbed, it will be hard to get it. It's not impossible. It will be hard. When the water of samadhi is clear and pure, the pearl of the heart-mind naturally manifests. Hence, the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment says, unimpeded and immaculate wisdom arises dependent on samadhi. The Lotus Sutra says, in a quiet place, one cultivates the control of the mind, abiding motionlessly, like Mount Sumeru. Mount Sumeru is a mythological mountain in Indian cosmology, pre-Buddhist time. It's the center of the universe that holds up the whole cosmos. So all the manifold appearances does not move Mount Sumeru. That's samadhi. If you would like to know further about this? The Sutra of Complete Enlightenment is translated, and Master Sheng Yan has commentary to it.
We have it in the library.
Yeah, we have it in the library. You can get it at Amazon.com, Barnes & Nobles. It's very easy. Lotus Sutra, widely available, many translations. I don't think there are commentary to it, but Sutra Complete Enlightenment has. The last paragraph. You should know that transcending the ordinary and surpassing the holy are contingent on the condition of meditation. Shedding this body while seated in meditation and dying while standing up are necessarily dependent on the power of samadhi. And many Chan masters, they die in a seated meditation posture. There was one Chan master. He says, "No, everyone dies seated in meditation. I'm going to die standing up." And then he expired. He died. Right there. Chan is the path of wisdom. Right? Chan practitioners are liberated through wisdom. So their samadhi power may not be that strong. There's two types of liberation in traditional Buddhist context. Either so-called Hinayana or Mahayana, small vehicle, gray vehicle, Chan vehicle, Tibetan. Two types. Those that are liberated through wisdom and those that are liberated through samadhi. There are many instances in early Buddhist texts, the Agamas and the Nikayas, in which we see the Buddha, upon one word to this lay person, come here, first time hearing a Dharma talk, the Buddha, knowing exactly what to say, give the right medicine, that person attain arhatship thoroughly. Does he have samadhi power? Hell no. He hasn't even learned meditation yet. Liberation, at least in this lifetime. He has practiced for many lifetimes, maybe. But those people liberate through wisdom. Instantly, they hear something, understood them. Self-attachment drop away. There are those who gain liberation through samadhi, and they practice very strong. Those people that are liberated through wisdom is what we call sharp karmic root. Very sharp, high potential. Usually, these people, they can get quick access, breakthrough. It's like a sheet of cloth. And their capability is like a needle. Very easy to go through, right? Did they go through? Yes. Does it have any effect on the cloth? Not too much. But they went through. That's like the Lotus Sutra says. Some sentient beings cross the river. This analogy that the Lotus Sutra says. It's like a rabbit crossing the river. Did the rabbit touch the depth of the river? No, it just floats on top. Did it get across? Yeah, it got across. Another person, it's like a horse in the beginning, able to touch the ground. But in the middle, kind of can't touch the depth of the river. Okay. But gets across. There are others who are like a great elephant. It goes right across the river. The whole depth of the river is able to understand. Those people are those who liberated through samadhi. Right? Chan practitioners, after they see the self nature, the first initial enlightenment, what do they have to do? They gotta cultivate samadhi. Otherwise, big vexations come, they have no power. It's like a cloth. The cloth of self-attachment. A needle go through? Did it go through? Yeah, the needle go through. But the hole is so minuscule. whereas a fist going through, ripped through a cloth. When that fist ripped through a cloth, you can't even mend it. You can try to sew it back together, but the cloth is already very weakened. Samadhi. The Buddha, perfection in samadhi. Perfection in all aspects. So a person, even though Chan says, see your self nature, become a Buddha. Yeah, the Buddha of self nature. Not the Buddha of like Shakyamuni Buddha, that type of Buddha. Cut off vexations of our self nature. Master limitless approaches of our self nature. Self nature, of course, everything's already perfect. Still need practice. Still need practice. Continue. That's why samadhi, for the attainment of full Buddhahood, essential. And those masters who have great samadhi power, after first experience of enlightenment, and then again and again and again and again, and then practice samadhi. You see, some Chan master is able to do this. Like my great grandmaster in the Cao Dong line, right? Master Dong Chu, seated meditation, expired. Right? The night before, took a bath. He says to his attendant, tomorrow morning, no need to prepare breakfast. Where are my new robes? Okay. Here. So why is the master? Is the master going out somewhere? Why does he need new robes? Next day morning, discover the master in new robes. This is what this is. Right. Shedding the body in seated meditation. Right. Shedding the life. But I haven't met anyone that can dying while standing. I read about this. But ordinary people. They may have great wisdom, they cannot do this. You need samadhi power to do this. Even if one devotes to the practice his entire life, he may still make mistakes. How then could one who procrastinates possibly overcome karmic obstacles? So it's urging us to practice. Thus, an ancient person has said, without the power of samadhi, you will meekly cower at death, at death's door. Shutting your eyes, you will end your life in vain. Just as you are, you drift in samsara. Birth, death, birth, death, again and again. Friends in Chan, go over this text again and again. Benefit yourself and others. Let us together attain full awakening. Conclusion. So let us all together attain full awakening. Those of you who need to leave, you may do so.
I have an announcement to make, and I think it should be best made in the dining room. Can we all go to the dining room?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we do a short conclusion? Short conclusion. And then the retreat ends. Okay. Massage a little bit and stand up. We will do gratitude.